Welcome, gentle listeners, to the Daily Nightly, a Jane Austen journey, where we'll be reading the collective works of Jane Austen and exploring her influence in pop culture. We are your humble servants. I'm Annie A.K.
And I am Jessie.
And today we are talking about chapters 11 through 15 of Jane Austen's Pride and Prejudice. Jessie.
Yeah, we're really breezing through this. Yeah.
We are. Is it just me or does it feel like it's going really fast?
No, it definitely feels like it's going fast.
But we have so much stuff to happen still, so many chapters to cover, but we're meeting a lot of interesting people.
Yeah, I had forgotten that these character introductions that we got in these chapters happened so quickly because so much of my memory, and this is probably my biased like high school memory of just like waiting for her to like see Darcy again. So much of my memory is like them like sitting around Longbourn, like writing letters and sitting by candlelight, like waiting. When in actuality, especially the beginning of this book is very fast paced.
Mm-hmm. There were moments where I was like, well, I guess we're just not talking to Darcy now. This chapter's boring. I have nothing to say about it. And then we get into more stuff.
Yeah.
Before we dive into that, though, how about you tell me what you've been reading, watching, paying attention to in general?
Yeah, so my favorite thing that I just finished was a book called Such a Fun Age by Kylie Reid. It's her debut novel. Mm. It's a Reese Witherspoon book club book. And I think it was just picked up by Lena Waithe for a television show. And I had originally wanted to get it from the library, but the library hold list was like astronomically long, like 6 months long or something like that.
Wow.
And it was the longest that I've ever seen for a book. And so I caved. I was like, I gotta read this right now. So I bought it and I downloaded it and it was so good. It's a story. It's told in alternating POVs. One is this white woman named Alex who hires this black woman named Amira to watch her daughter, who's about 2 years old, named Briar. And one night they need Amira to take the daughter out to keep her busy while they deal with some sort of crisis. And Amira takes her to like a fancy grocery store. And the security guard there accuses Amira of kidnapping the child. And someone videotapes the exchange. And from there, the situation just like spirals out and these women's lives become intertwined. And it's just this really, really biting satire. But it's also really funny. And it made me think a ton. And everyone was created really in a nuanced way, and it was just like perfectly crafted. It's told in four parts, and in one of the parts it reads like a play. They have a Thanksgiving dinner and it's like you're reading a play almost, this part. And it was funny and clever and biting and a really interesting critique, and I really, really highly recommend it. And I recommend buying it too, instead of maybe waiting in your library holds list. It's that good.
You sound so excited for it.
Yeah, you know, it was funny because I was just bitching last week about like, I don't like anything.
Yeah, so the thing was last week, you're just like, well, you know, I guess I tried a few things and it was fine. No, that's really exciting. This book has appeared on so many lists that I came across that were, you know, I was trying to see what was up and coming for the year. And this was the only book that was literally at the top of every single list that I came across. And I wanted to buy it, but I'm trying to wait a little bit too because I have so many other books to read and a couple of pre-orders that I'm waiting on.
Yeah, I really highly recommend it. And I do recommend buying it. I mean, it's a debut author who's like phenomenal, mm-hmm. and it's going to be a show, so you might read it again before the show comes out. I'm glad I didn't wait because it's already been a highlight of my year and it's only been a couple weeks into the year. So
that is a nice high standard to set for 2020.
I know, and I know that I'm not the only one that read a book that I really liked. Annie, what are you consuming media-wise lately?
So I talked last time about reading Love Boat Taipei, which I don't know how excited I sounded about it. I think I called it delightful and charming and all that usual stuff last time. But probably, I don't know, a third of the way in, I picked it up to just do like a little bit of reading for the night. And I ended up finishing it that night because it starts off as kind of like, you know, almost typical YA romance kind of thing, and then it just like turned blossomed or something into this, I don't know, very nuanced look at like, you know, the second generation immigrant experience of obligation to your family and not sort of resenting but also knowing and feeling like you have to honor the debt of gratitude you have towards your family for everything they gave you and for the big move they made and all these different relationships between young people and how they're dealt with and the weight that young people can put upon their shoulders, taking care of others. I don't know. It was just really, really interesting. At some point, I even get a little bit of like a fake romance. That's always a fun time. Mm-hmm. And then like at one point, it gets a little sexy, but it's funny too because, and someone says something like, oh, I didn't know you were so good with your mouth. And this kid is like, thanks. I won my speech competition junior year of high school. It's like, that's good one. No, it was a really fabulous book. I cried at the end. There were some Mulan feelings. I literally just started sobbing and texted my parents and told them that I miss them. And I don't cry much over books, as emotional and beautiful as I find them. I rarely ever actually just shed tears. So I was very impressed. Also a very strong debut novel, I thought, by Abigail Hing-Wen, who also happens to have a degree from Harvard and then a law degree from Columbia, and somewhere in there she also got an MFA. So,
well, isn't that a shame that she's not accomplished at all?
She knows a thing or two about being an underachiever, I guess.
Yeah.
No, so that was a lot of fun. Haven't had a chance to do much else media-wise. Been looking forward to the new season of Sex Education. The trailer is absolutely lovely. At some point, some girl just tearfully admits that she feels broken, and Gillian Anderson's character goes, sex doesn't complete us, so how are you broken? And I wanted to cry.
I've never seen that show, but that kind of makes me want to watch.
Have you seen Lovesick?
No.
Okay, well, you have to watch that too.
Okay, I'm sorry.
They both have a kind of...
I let you down.
So disappointed. No, they have kind of a similar tone and play around with the storytelling and I think have just really lovely ideas of love and sex and all that stuff. We'll talk later about that. But I did start, finally, Hank Green's An Absolute Remarkable Thing, which was his debut novel. Mm-hmm. And in anticipation of his second one coming out, I've started it a few times and never really quite got into it, but I like Hank Green a lot. And I finally made it past to where I normally stop at, and I'm enjoying it already a lot. I think I just didn't like the audiobook version, because sometimes it just didn't hit. But there's a lot of hints to future events that I didn't pick up on the first time, and I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
Cool. Sounds great.
Yeah. There's always so much to consume, you know.
I know.
But.
Yes.
Our queen.
Pride Jane and Prejudice. Austen. Yeah. Back to Jane.
It all stems from Jane. Mm-hmm. So before you fill us in on everything that happened in chapters 11 through 15, let me remind everyone what happened before then. When we last left the Bennet sisters, they were still enraptured by the new arrivals in town, but also by the militia who have arrived at Meryton and who doesn't love a man in uniform. Jane is invited to stop by and hang with the Bingley sisters, but the delightfully evil Mrs. Bennet has a good idea that essentially traps Jane at Netherfield with a cold. Ever the doting sister, Elizabeth comes to join their party to take care of her sisters and ends up in the middle of being the object of affection of Mr. Darcy and an object of jealousy for Miss Bingley, who is trying very, very hard to grab that Darcy man. she's got a goal, that Caroline Bingley.
She does, and she's very as we'll see in these chapters, she doesn't quite let up.
Mm-hmm. Persistent, our Caroline. All right, so what happens in chapters 11 through 15?
Yeah, speaking of Miss Bingley, still not over not being Mr. Darcy's favorite, she spends the next night at Netherfield still trying to attract his attention, first by reading, then by criticizing the foolishness of balls, and finally by walking about the room, as one does when they're trying to catch a man's attention. Mm-hmm. Only when she asks Elizabeth to join her, though, does Darcy look up, and then the women discuss the possibility of finding something to ridicule in his character. He states that his only fault is resentment, and Elizabeth replies that it's hard to laugh when someone hates everyone. Miss Bingley, observing Elizabeth monopolizing Darcy's attention once again, insists on music. The next morning, Elizabeth writes to her mother to say that she and Jane are ready to go home. Mrs. Bennet wishes Jane to stay longer with Bingley, and she refuses to send the carriage. Elizabeth goes against her mother's wishes and insists on borrowing Bingley's carriage, and they finally leave Netherfield Park. Darcy is glad to see them go, as Elizabeth attracts him much more than he likes, and he considers her still an unsuitable prospect for marriage. The morning after his daughter's return from Netherfield, Mr. Bennet informs his wife of the imminent visit from a one Mr. William Collins, who will be the one to inherit Mr. Bennet's property. Mr. Collins, the reader learns, from a letter he sends to the Bennets is a clergyman whom the wealthy noblewoman Lady Catherine de Bourgh has recently selected to serve her parish. His letter, as Mr. Bennet points out, contains a mixture of servility and self-importance, and his personality is similar. He arrives at Longbourn and apologizes for being entitled to the Bennet's property, but spends most of his time admiring and complimenting the house that will one day be his. At dinner, Mr. Cotlins lavishes praise on Lady Catherine and her daughter, a lonely, sickly woman who will one day inherit a fortune. After the meal, he's asked to read to the girls, but he refuses to read from a novel and instead reads from a book of sermons instead. Lydia becomes so bored that she interrupts his reading with more gossip about the soldiers. Mr. Collins is offended and eventually abandons his reading. Mr. Collins is in search of a wife, and when Mrs. Bennet hints that Jane may soon be engaged, he fixes his attention on Elizabeth. The day after his arrival, he accompanies the sisters to the town of Meryton, where they encounter one of Lydia's officer friends, Denny. Denny introduces his new friend, Mr. Wickham, who has joined the militia, and the young women find Mr. Wickham very charming. While they converse, Darcy and Bingley happen by, and Elizabeth notes that Wickham and Darcy are extremely cold to one another. Darcy and Bingley depart, and the company pays a visit to Mrs. Phillips, Mrs. Bennet's sister, who invites the Bennets and Mr. Collins to dine at her house the following night. The girls convince her to invite the charming Mr. Wickham as well. They return home, and Mr. Collins spends the evening telling Mrs. Bennet how greatly his sister's good breeding impresses him. And that's where we're left at the end of chapter 15.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of new characters.
Oh, yeah. We finally meet Miss Phillips a little bit after hearing about her. And that's where the whole scene with, like, every time I see scenes with people meeting in ribbon shops, that's where that comes from, because they never actually... They always cut her out of the movies and adaptations.
Oh, that's a very good point.
Every time I don't miss it. Okay, ribbons.
Oh, well, before we get to meet the handsome Mr. Wickham, we still are stuck at Netherfield.
Yes, we are.
Yeah.
Basically, everyone's just sitting around, still just waiting for Jane to get better.
I know. It is kind of, like, awkward that, like, they're just really there, like, Elizabeth wasn't really invited, and she's just kind of, like, sitting there, and everybody sort of wants them to leave, except Mr. Bingley.
Oh, yes, of course. Mr. Bingley wants to make sure that Jane is as comfortable as possible. He's just, like, bending over backwards to make sure she's comfortable. They're like, well, let's keep her entertained, but, you know, let's keep her warm. I'm going to spend half an hour, like, trying to build a fire and then making her move closer.
I love this line, too. Before the men even join them, it's just Elizabeth, Jane, and the Miss Bingleys. And it says, Elizabeth had never seen them so agreeable as they were during the hour which passed before the gentlemen arrived. So it sounds like they're, like, nice and lovely when the men aren't present. I was like, I don't know what that says.
Do you ever see that movie, Love Potion Number 9?
Yes, with Sandra Bullock.
Yes. And then there's the Love Potion Number 9, it makes someone really attracted to a person. So if, like, a man took it, all the women are really attracted to him. But it also makes the women, like, really catty and competitive with other women.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, that's what's happening here.
Oh, my God. Love Potion. I haven't thought of that movie in so long.
I was saying that movie is older than it actually is. But
Tate Donovan is in that movie.
Oh, that's who that is.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
I love him. Anyway.
Oh, my God. Anyways, yeah. So yeah. I just thought about that. I was like, oh, no, this is it. Like, it goes hand in hand, the attraction, but also the competitiveness.
I know. It is kind of, like, sad because, like, they do, at least they seem to like Jane. And sometimes they're even nice to Elizabeth. But they'll just, like, sort of never be friends because of the men, or they're just snobs and it doesn't really matter.
Yeah, it's super weird. But I feel like it's a very astute observation that she's just kind of throwing in there, just going, yeah, I mean, everything's fine. But then the men appear and the whole business of trying to get married just seems to ruin all relationships.
Oh, gosh, Miss Bingley. I feel like, I mean, I know that she's a snob and she's not very nice, but, like, I just feel really bad for her here. She's just, like, laying it on so thick. Mr. Darcy doesn't like cards. Okay, so I'm not going to play cards with him. Like, he's going to take up a book. I'm going to take up a book. But instead of, like, me reading it, I'm going to watch Mr. Darcy read his book. It's just like, oh, stop.
And the book that she's reading is the sequel to book he's reading.
Oh, yeah. I forgot that.
I'm like, oh.
Carolyn, okay. Please.
It's like, girl, let's learn a little hard to get, at least.
And she goes, how pleasant it is to spend the evening in this way. There's no better way to spend an evening than reading. When I have a house of my own, I'll be miserable if I don't have a library. It's like, Carolyn, you know, we all heard Mr. Darcy say like the exact same thing the other night. We all know what you're doing.
Mm-hmm. She's trying so hard, but it's not the most elegant flirting.
I know. There's a line like in a later chapter where when Elizabeth finally leaves and Darcy's like relieved, and he's not only relieved because Elizabeth is leaving because he like mm-hmm. likes her and feels weird about it because he's a child, whatever. But he also is happy because Miss Bingley like gives him a lot more attention when Elizabeth is around and he's over it. And so like that's why he's relieved also. Like it isn't just because of Elizabeth. I'm trying to.
And he does notice that she is less nice to Elizabeth too.
Yeah, I think the Elizabeth had been at Netherfield long enough. She'd attracted him more than he liked, and Miss Bingley was uncivil to her and more teasing than usual to himself.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of an interesting insight.
Also, and again, just because we're going a little bit out of order, when they finally leave, or they're about to leave, Caroline suggests staying one more day or something like that, and, you know, before using the Bingley's carriage.
I know exactly what you're lying to think of.
And it says, Miss Bingley was then sorry that she had proposed the delay, for her jealousy and dislike. One sister very much exceeded her affection for the other. I thought that was funny.
Yeah, I definitely think that explains it. Like, she sounds like they do really like Jane, but, like, while Elizabeth's there, she's just not going to get the attention she wants. Or mm-hmm. it's not even so much that she wants the attention, it's that Elizabeth gets it so naturally. It's, like, a relief to not have her there.
Yeah, because she's trying so hard. I can't imagine how exhausting it must be right now to be Caroline.
Well, I remember reading, maybe it was, I can't remember if it was reading or watching it the first time, and her, like, idea to take, like, a turn about the room. I was like, are they literally just walking around the room? Like, I don't understand.
Like, is that just a thing people did then? I imagine it's a big room, but it's weird.
And her figure was elegant when she walked, and she walked well.
Oh, yeah, and somehow it was aimed at Darcy. I love that you can aim a walk at someone.
He's, like, not looking at all, but then the minute that Elizabeth gets up, he looks up and then unconsciously closes his book.
It's fabulous. Austen paints such a great picture here of the difference of how Darcy reacts to the both of them, that even if we didn't get as much insight into how we felt about Elizabeth, I think it would be very clear that he feels something there, whether he's aware of it or not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think Miss Bingley and Elizabeth are sort of opposites. You know, like, she's very quick mm-hmm. and Miss Bingley's sort of foolish, and Elizabeth is really quick, and then Miss Bingley's desperate for Darcy's attention, while Elizabeth sort of, like, disdains him and, like, mocks him. And Miss mm-hmm. Bingley is, like, falling all over herself to praise him, but Elizabeth is like, no, like, he's being a jerk, let's make fun of him. And Bingley's mm-hmm. no, we can't make fun of Darcy. Nobody can make fun of Darcy. And Elizabeth's like, no, if there's someone you can't make fun of, then they're like, what's the point of them even, like, existing?
Mm-hmm. Caroline is bending over backwards to change who she is as a person, and Lizzie is just like, I'm going to be me, and me currently does not like Darcy, so don't know what to tell you.
She doesn't like him, but I know she doesn't like him, or she says she doesn't like him, and we're in her head enough that maybe, like, we're supposed to just take that for granted, but they do flirt here.
They do, because it's not all just disdain from Elizabeth.
Mm-hmm.
You have some moments when they're talking about weaknesses and everything, and, you know, Elizabeth is just like, why? You know, I'm just going to tease him a little bit. I just want to tease with him. And Darcy is so uptight about it and talking about how he says, it has been the study of my life to avoid those weaknesses which often expose a strong understanding to ridicule. Elizabeth says, such as vanity and pride. And he says, yes, vanity is a weakness indeed, but pride, where there is real superiority of mind, pride will always be under good regulation. And Elizabeth turns away to hide a smile. So, like, I think she's enjoying it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Maybe she doesn't like that she enjoys it, or maybe she doesn't recognize that there may be some, it's a sign of something else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, but she's clearly, like, happy to go. Like, she doesn't stay longer. Like, she's like, no, we're going to get Bingley's carriage. We're going to leave. So I don't think she wants to stay and enjoy it. But then again, like, instead of Darcy being like, okay, I like this, I enjoy this, he's scared of how much he does enjoy it. And his reaction is to just ignore her the next day. He's like, I'm not going to talk like one word to her. Even if we're in the same room for half an hour alone, I'm not saying one word to her.
He's just going to read his book.
Yeah.
Yeah. And his whole point is to just try to hide his feelings, not encourage any feelings on her part. But it's like there are no feelings on her part as far as she's aware.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I just love.
She's just hanging.
I love it so much when he goes. And she says, and your defect is a propensity to hate everybody. And he says, and yours, he replied with a smile, is willfully to misunderstand them. So, like, he's smiling. And he feels the danger of paying her too much attention. It's, like, very sexy.
It is. And everyone can sense it because that's the moment where Mrs. Bingley is like, okay, let's have music.
Yeah. Ugh, I love that scene. It's always in every adaption, and it's just, like, rife with sexual attention. That's why I get, like, kind of frustrated when these adaptions are maybe a little bit more overtly sexual, or if people, like, complain that mm-hmm. there's not enough, whatever, sex in Jane Austen. Because this is, like, super sexy. This banter, mm-hmm. this is chemistry. These are sparks between them.
There's something to that, mm-hmm. the restraint and the pulling back. That's, like, really sexy.
It's so sexy.
That's the kind of sexy you read Austen for.
Mm-hmm. It's just so good, and they're like clearly very compatible, and they both are enjoying this. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I love that exchange, and I will always love it. It never gets old.
It's so good, and it's the dynamic that kind of just carries us through everything, I think.
Oh yeah, this is like them at their like best. Like this is them. Their chemistry is just like evident to everybody. Because if it wasn't, then Miss Bingley wouldn't be as threatened. But she's clearly very threatened. Mm-hmm.
She really is.
And Darcy wouldn't pull back if he didn't feel it. And Elizabeth is kind of just like, well, he's never going to like me, like, whatever about it. So I don't think she does. I don't think she's very introspective about it.
There's this is like the second chapter we have ending with him talking about being in danger of anything really with Elizabeth. And I was like, this is the second one in a row. What the heck are you doing? I feel like you're trying to tell me something.
I know. And I'm really blown away by that because I had forgotten how like acknowledged his affection for her is mm-hmm. in the books. Like he explicitly like says it like, well, I really like her.
It's just so great. It's that objectively he knows this is bad, and another part of him is going, but I want it.
Yeah, and it really makes you like him more because you're like, oh, he's not falling for Miss Bingley's overtures. He's appreciative of Elizabeth's sass and her wit, just like we are. So we're like, okay, like Darcy gets it. So I think this is helping us as the reader like warm up to him as well as Elizabeth, even if she's not cognizant of it yet.
She's just very much her own person who does not need to be married or to hunt down a husband. Yeah.
I'm having trouble divorcing, like, my love of Darcy from maybe, like, if you read this. I do think, though, if you read this the first time, like, I mm-hmm. was charmed by their interactions immediately. Because I remember being disappointed that they didn't have as much time together in the book as I wanted. So I don't think it's one of those things, like, in Sense and Sensibility where we meet Willoughby or we meet Edward and we don't know whether to like them or trust them or forgive the terminology, but like ship them with the characters we like. Mm-hmm. But I think here it's like pretty obvious that we're supposed to be rooting for Darcy and Elizabeth. I mean, I don't know. What do you think?
I think so. I think the fact that we do have so much insight in Darcy's perspective and we hear so much about how he knows he shouldn't like her, but he does. And he's going to actively try to not display it or encourage it in himself. But then we also see how everyone else reacts to this obvious connection between the two of them. Mm-hmm. It's, and like increasingly so, we see like the less horrible things that he says.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. No, I don't want to excuse that sort of thing because like he like really insults her like we talked about last mm-hmm. chapter. So I don't think it excuses it, but I'm definitely like warming up to him even if I wasn't in love with him.
Like, you mean how the reception was when the books first came out and this kind of story wasn't a trope?
Or as like a first-time reader. Like, I don't want to put in my bias of having read this a lot. I don't want to project it onto like someone that's reading it for the first time.
It's so hard to imagine a world. Like, I feel like you'd have to go pretty far back to get to a world where most people didn't already have an idea of the story before mm-hmm. actually reading it for the first time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just kind of, I thought it'd be an interesting thought exercise because I don't want to like push it too much or like force the reader to want them to be together. But I think we are supposed to be into them as a couple even now.
Mm-hmm. I think so. With just enough there of, oh, I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. I feel like as a reader, I personally am more into it right now than Elizabeth is.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely.
Like, I don't even think she's against it right now. She's not even thinking about it at all. It's not even an act of denial.
Well, it could never happen. Like, he's too wealthy. He's too proud. She doesn't really seem to think that any man would be worthy of her, which, mm-hmm. fair.
Yeah, she's pretty great.
Yeah. So I think that's kind of a good summary of where we're supposed to be at right now. But then Darcy's like, I'm not even going to talk to her. I'm not going to say 10 words to her. I'm not going to even look at her.
And once she's gone, he's relieved.
Oh, yeah. Darcy, you're so mature.
Yeah. And Caroline is – and at the end there, Caroline and Elizabeth are even nice to each other because they're like, oh, thank God I'm leaving.
Yeah. On Sunday, after morning service, the separation so agreeable to almost all took place.
Everyone was real happy. Everyone except Mrs. Bennett.
Oh, yeah. She's the only one. And Mr. Bingley probably wanted Jane to stay forever.
Yes. There is one way to make that happen, Bingley. Get on that.
Oh, seriously. But then we also have Mr. Bennett's happy to have Jane and Elizabeth back because before, while they were gone, there was apparently no sense.
Which is kind of cute. Their family unit is so integrated into each other that two of them are gone for a couple days, almost a whole week. Things just kind of feel off kilter, mm-hmm. even if they drive each other crazy.
No, it is nice. And I don't really begrudge, you know, Lydia being obsessed with the, like, militia. Like, I get it. It's you know, they have kind of a sleepy town. And the militia mm-hmm. is a whole bunch of uniformed, eligible men. So,
she's
yeah.
She's a young girl.
Yeah, talk about the militia.
This is basically her boy band.
Yeah, talk about that. Oh, my God, Annie.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
That was incredible. I was, like, literally struck by that.
Like, I think especially us former teen girls can relate to that feeling of just, like, oh, my God, these men, I want them to be mine.
That
and really, they're maybe, like, 20.
That is incredible. This is their boy band.
Exactly. I think it's the closest, like, feeling. This is the most comparable thing that they have.
Love that because I feel like people are always like, oh, Lydia and Kitty are so silly, they're obsessed with these men, and now that's all they want to talk about. But like, why not let these teenage girls like be obsessed with the handsome, well-dressed men?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I love that. That was great.
Thank you.
But yeah, everybody's back in Longbourn, everybody is in their places, but now we have a new introduction, a new character in
mm-hmm. someone else to upset the apple cart.
Yes, Mr. Collins. So, what do we think about Mr. Collins? Only based on chapter 13.
Having read the letter, I kind of felt that, hey, maybe Mrs. Bennett's being a little hard. It's a good letter.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Generally. Overall, it's mm-hmm. a good letter. I think it's really apologetic. It's kind of humble. It acknowledges like his loyalty to his father, who was at odds with Mr. Bennett, and acknowledges the elephant in the room, which is he's going to inherit everything and take it, you know, potentially take it away from the daughters who have lived there and belong to the property as much as it belongs to them,
mm-hmm.
like emotionally. So at first it sounds really good. Like he's someone who is thoughtful and aware. That's where that ends.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think that there's a conversation after the letter between Elizabeth and Mr. Bennett where they're sort of having, what do you think about him based on this letter? And it's Elizabeth who says, well, I can't make him out. Like, there's something very pompous in his style of writing, which is true. Mm-hmm. Like, the right honorable lady, you know, like, really, dude? And then she sort of says to her dad, do you think that he could possibly have any sense? And the father goes, I have great hopes of finding him quite the reverse. There's a mixture of servility and self-importance in his letter, which promises well. I'm impatient to see him. So you get the sense that they're pointing out that this letter is a little self-important and the person writing it likely is too. So that's sort mm-hmm. of the bias that you go into like when you meet him. But I agree. I don't think based on just the letter alone that you can totally make out exactly how he's going to be upsetting the apple cart, to borrow your lovely turn of phrase.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds like it's not completely clueless, I think. I think Mr. Bennett may have been colored by his, like, opinion of Collins' father when he saw it.
Mm-hmm. That's a very good point, yeah. Because clearly the reason that, like, he says that, Collins says that the reason that he hasn't reached out before is because he was waiting for his father to die.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's just, like, the kind of person who actually stops and, like, you kind of have to admire someone who stops and think, I want to, like, create peace within families, especially because I'm a clergyman, and but also I don't want to dishonor my father and how mm-hmm. he lived his life and everything. That's actually a really nice, thoughtful thing on the surface.
Yeah, we get these two. I wrote down these two descriptions of him. And in chapter 13, when we meet him, we get this sentence that says, he was a tall, heavy-looking young man of 5 and 20. His air was grave and stately, and his manners were very formal. So it's not like he's not described as handsome or gentleman-like Bingley and Darcy have been described mm-hmm. as. But then at the end of chapter 13, the first sentence of chapter 4, the next chapter is, Mr. Collins was not a sensible man, and the deficiency of nature had been but little assisted by education or society. So we get this one chapter where we're like trying to make him out, and then immediately the next chapter, Jane says, nope, this guy is a jerk. Yeah, he's kind of a, you know, an idiot. He's not very smart, and he's sort of a loser.
And then he spends so much time talking about his patron, Lady Catherine de Bourgh. Mm-hmm. Like, more than anyone says anything in a row, he talks about her, and it's exhausting.
It's so exhausting. I mean, he doesn't have, like, a lot of tact. Like, he thinks that he can just compliment people and that'll be sufficient. But it's like, we all know that you're here because you're gonna inherit everything. So when you walk around complimenting the house, complimenting the food, complimenting all the furniture, it comes off. He's very unaware of how it comes off because he thinks he compliments are what young ladies like to hear. But meanwhile, they're all hearing, oh, he likes all the stuff that he's about to inherit.
And he talks about, you know, complimenting Lady Catherine's daughter because he knows that ladies like that. And sometimes he practices that kind of thing. And then he, like, tells them the compliments that he gives, which is kind of weird. It's like a play-by-play of you should be impressed by how, like, I totally win them over, you know?
Yeah, he's very just... not self-aware. It's funny that it sort of charms Mrs. Bennet, but like doesn't work at all on mm-hmm. Mr. Bennet or Elizabeth. But yeah, I was just laughing about the stuff he was saying about how being charming is like really a point of true beauty, and that Mr. Bourgh is far superior to the handsome of the success of her sex because she's distinguished. And it's just like, okay, she's not pretty is what you're saying.
Yes.
Her personality is so good.
I think I put underneath that quote, this is not the compliment you think it is.
Yeah.
No, Mrs. Bennet is super interesting in her whole dynamic with Mr. Collins, because the second that Mr. Bennet mentions having received a letter, she's like, no, I don't want him here. Why do I want him here? Oh, so Mr. Bennet says, Mr. Collins, who when I am dead may turn you all out of this house as soon as he pleases, when she's asking who's coming, and she's, oh my dear, I cannot bear it. You hear that mention, pray do not talk to me of that odious man. I do think it is the hardest thing in the world that your estate should be entrailed away from your own children, and I am sure if I had been you, I should have tried long ago to do something or other about it. Like, you get, she kind of probably resents Mr. Bennet for letting it happen. And apparently Jane Elizabeth have tried to explain to her the whole inheritance thing to her anyways, and state that no matter how many times they tried to explain it to her, it says, Mrs. Bennet was beyond the reach of reason, and she continued to rail bitterly against the cruelty of settling an estate away from a family of 5 daughters in favor of a man whom nobody cared anything about. She's real pissed.
So she's not wrong.
No. And like, I don't think that she can't understand it. I think she doesn't want to understand it because it is so unfair.
I mean, it's so unfair. Like, here we have Mr. Bourgh's, you know, gets all of her parents' fortune and she's a girl. Mm-hmm. So I'm kind of on Mrs. Bennet's side. I'd be super pissed too.
Absolutely. She's so mad. She even calls him like false friends and a hypocrite and all that stuff. And even asks, why could he not keep up on quarreling with you as his father did before him? She is ride or die. Mm-hmm. But then there's a huge turnabout when Mr. Collins stops and isn't completely terrible. But most importantly, he insinuates that he may marry one of the Bennet girls, which would keep the property in the family. Mm-hmm. And suddenly, I was like, well, Jane might be taken. But Elizabeth, I'm just saying. So she's like all about what is the objectively best situation for my family. Mm-hmm. And it's she's so practical. Interesting. Mm-hmm. She is. We did get an email from our lovely listener and friend, Leah. Leia. I'm sorry, I don't know how to pronounce it correctly or how you pronounce it. Basically, just quickly popping in saying that she was looking forward to all Mrs. Bennet talks because she says, I have also come to sympathize with her more since I first read the book, and sent us an article that was published on Lit Hub a few years ago in defense of Mrs. Bennet and how she's actually like a really amazing subversive character that maybe even Austen didn't realize that she was creating. And I'll link it in the show notes. And I just think about her a lot as we read through these books and how she just wants her daughters to survive. This is something that's come up in our discussions about this book, about Sense and Sensibility. And it doesn't always end up with the right results. She's often quite wrong, but I can't not appreciate her intention.
Yeah, there are definitely times where I'm annoyed with her. Like, I don't think a defense of her needs to absolve her completely, because making Jane get a cold to, you know, hang out with Bingley, like, I don't love that. But in this situation, at least, you know, she's sort of maligned because she's frustrated that Mr. Bennet has not fought the entail. Mm-hmm. And I think she's sort of justified here. I think that it's fine to be upset about it, and I would be upset about it too. And especially when this man shows up and he's just talking about how great their house is, and you fully know that, well, he's going to be the one to inherit it, so maybe he's like coming to catalog everything. So I definitely understand her point of view there and sort of side with her. But then I don't like her foisting Elizabeth on Mr. Collins either, because this man mm-hmm. is not sensible and silly, and the fact that she can't even see it. You know, like, why not pair him with Mary? I'm sure Mary would like hearing the sermons. She knows her daughter, she knows Elizabeth, but she's so focused on getting her daughters married that it sort of clouds her other judgment, and I can judge her based on that, but I can also be understanding. And so I'm not willing to absolve her completely, but I'm willing to see the nuance there and not just sort of write her off as this silly woman.
It is kind of, I feel like, something that a lot of us go through as we get older. Our parents are still annoying people, but you also see where they were coming from mm-hmm. and their own experiences. Because as we saw, Mrs. Bennet's father's business didn't go to her or even her brother. It went to her sister's husband, mm-hmm. who admittedly worked there. So it's interesting.
I included this line, I think, is a burn, maybe. I don't really know why, but when Mr. Collins shows up, there's a line that Jane writes that says, she was preparing to see him with a degree of composure which astonished her husband and daughters. So they expect her to, like, sort of blow up and be ridiculous to him, and she isn't, because she can, like, keep it together. And it's just sort of, like, an interesting line that Jane, like, throws in there.
That's a good one. So we get many instances where we just hear Mr. Collins talk. He just keeps talking. I think one of the first lines that we actually hear about him, because Mr. Bennet isn't exactly talking a lot, and you've got the other girls who are happy to provide the conversation, but it also mentions that he is not afraid of being silent either. I think it was part of a quote that you said. He was not inclined to be silent himself.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, where it starts. And from then on, you just see it happening. He just keeps talking. At some point, I think he mentions, at some point he says something that wasn't super great, and he begged pardon for having displeased her. In a softened tone, she declared herself not at all offended, she being Mrs. Bennet, but he continued to apologize for about a quarter of an hour. It's like, oh no, he's that guy.
And we've sort of discussed in Sense and Sensibility, and I think in our last episode on Pride and Prejudice, we discussed books sort of being a calling card for whether mm-hmm. a person is someone that you should root for, you know, whether they like books or not. And at the end of the chapter, when he's reading the sermon instead of the novel, he says something like, I have often observed how little young ladies are interested by books of a serious stamp, though written solely for their benefit. And it just feels even more cutting coming from Jane, as someone mm-hmm. that probably is used to hearing a lot as a writer of women's books and books targeted mm-hmm. towards women and books about romance, that these are like silly little books and that, you know, young ladies should be reading something a little bit more serious. So when she puts those kind of words in Collins's mouth, you're almost sort of taken aback even more so, because you're like, wow, she's putting this critique of her own work in the mouth of this man. And I think that's just so damning. And it makes you really be like, I don't like you at all.
He's so dismissive. He's like, I don't, he's just basically telling him, you know, you're so silly. You can't understand that this is for your own good. And what kind of clergyman, you know, is supposed to teach, lead the flock and everything when he's just like, well, you clearly don't want this, so I don't want it to give you the good word anyways. That's yeah. So meh. At some point when they were trying to pick something for him to read, some point a book was produced, but on beholding it, for everyone announced it to be from a circulating library, he started back and, begging pardon, protested that he never read novels. Kitty stared at him and Lydia exclaimed. I just like imagine the scream emoji.
How like, dare you?
Excuse me? I'm sorry, what? I don't like you. And so I did think about how we were talking about last week when you pointed out people who read in Jane Austen's world, good people. People who kind of fake it or not that interested, we don't, just throw them away.
Well, literally in the next chapter, when there's a line that says, Mr. Collins, being in face much better fitted for a walker than a reader, was extremely well pleased to close his large book and go. So there's like another instance of him being like, oh, well, I'll go to Meryton with you. And like, so I don't have to read anymore. It's like, dude, you're a clergyman. Like, maybe you should like reading more.
Like, yeah, no, he's just awful. And I get the sense that he is kind of an overly privileged person who didn't really feel like he had to work, despite the fact all the things that were provided for him, despite the fact he had access to a good education, he assumed he would have this good life without really putting any of the work into it or connecting with the education that he was provided. He just happened to have gotten really lucky in the end to have gotten a patron, and along with it, the respect that comes with being a clergyman with his own rectory.
Yeah, he's clearly a satire. He's a parody of a serious cleric. He's sort of a vehicle for Austen to criticize both the practice of entailment by law that forces Mr. Bennet to leave his property to such like a ridiculous man, but then also a lot of her critique about, you know, being a snob. He's not like Miss Bingley, because, or even this Lady Catherine, because he's not snobbish because he was born to a particular rank. He's snobbish because of his association with power, his proximity to power. He believes wholeheartedly in class, even though he only sort of gets second helpings of it, because he has to sort of put himself up next to Lady de Burgh, and instead of being embarrassed at his behavior, he thinks that because someone of value finds him of value, that makes him someone that is important. And I think that's really sort of foolish, because he's juxtaposed with characters like Elizabeth, who we've seen that might be born of a lower class but are still good people and are smart and worthy of our affection as the reader, versus this ridiculous character that believes his value is conferred on him because he has a fancy patron and because he knows how to compliment his way into the good graces of people that are rich. And he's an absurd character, and it is slowly revealed, even if it is over the course of a few pages. And it's just so exaggerated that we make fun of him. The audience proxies make fun of him, Mr. Bennet and Elizabeth. And yeah, it's an interesting introduction of a character.
I mean, the thing is, even though he is satire and you say he's exaggerated, at the same time, you're like, no, I've met people just like him or just as bad at him. I mean, nowadays are probably, I was just thinking like, oh, you just reminded me of Tahani Al-Jamil in The Good Place, who's just name dropping left and right, and who's so insecure because she doesn't feel like there's enough to her to impress other people. And it's interesting how he can, in so many ways, appear so confident, but at the same time, if you take away this part of him, you know, his clergymanship and his sponsor, it's like, what's left? It's nothing terribly impressive. And as you said, you know, compared to Elizabeth, she's someone who does not care about the money. She cares about how people feel about each other. She's only impressed by people who are actually kind and considerate and pay attention, especially to the people she cares about. Those are the people who actually impress her. So it's funny that one Mrs. Bennett would think to see them together. She thinks, yeah, sure, this will work out totally fine. You can totally just replace Jane with Elizabeth and try to get Mr. Collins to marry her and we'll all be fine. And Elizabeth will just agree.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's kind of incredible like how much Jane gets across in these, what, Mr. Collins is only on the scene a few pages before we're able to get a sense of him. We really take the same journey that they take where we're like, okay, maybe he's not terrible. And then you're like, oh yeah, no, he is terrible.
And then it gets worse.
Yeah. But he's not the only new character we met. We also immediately are introduced to Mr. Wickham, who is...
He is a man of most gentlemanlike appearance.
His appearance was greatly in his favor. He had all the best part of beauty, a fine countenance, a good figure, and a very pleasing address. So we know he's attractive.
He's attractive. We assume he's tall. He stands up straight.
Yeah, he barely has said a word, and we're already like, okay, he's very hot. Like, we should be his friend.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We should make sure he gets all the invites to all the dinners. Mm-hmm. We don't get a lot from him, but...
No, it's very superficial.
Mm-hmm. It's incredibly superficial, which is kind of fun. Obviously, it's not, like, the most important thing. But it's kind of fun that that is the introduction. Mm-hmm. He's just very handsome. But Darcy and Bingley also appear at some point on the road when they're walking along.
Oh, my God, the drama. They seemed
surprised to see each other. Both changed color. One looked white, the other red. Elizabeth noticed. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Nothing seems to come of it, but Elizabeth, who notices everything, she saw. Bingley, not so much. He seemed totally fine.
No, poor Bingley.
He's just happy to be here, guys.
My favorite part about this encounter isn't even the looks that Darcy and Wickham have, but mm-hmm. There's this line where Mr. Darcy corroborated with a bow and was beginning to determine not to fix his eyes on Elizabeth when suddenly they're arrested by the sight of the stranger. So he's like, oh crap, like Elizabeth's here. Gotta pretend I don't notice her. Like, oh shit, who's this other dude?
He has to force himself not to look at her and actually acknowledge everyone around them.
It's so funny. He's like, I can't look at her. I can't even look at her because I love her so much already. I can't even look at her in the face.
Do we know how old Mr. Darcy is supposed to be? I don't think it's stated.
Do they say it? But
it is a little bit like a slightly inexperienced young man.
Oh gosh, sometimes the way he handles stuff is so childlike.
It is. Like
a little boy.
Like, has he never had a crush before?
So Wikipedia says that he is 28. Source of all things. He's 28.
Oh, that's too old. Uh-huh. But as you can imagine, he mostly meets more Carolines than he does Elizabeths in his life.
Yeah, so he's rumored to be worth at least £10,000 a year. So that would be the mm-hmm. equivalent to £796,000 or $1,000,000, $1,045,000 a year in 2018. So he has a lot of money.
That's not terrible. That is a comfortable life.
So he's 28. How old is Elizabeth? Does it matter? I guess it doesn't matter.
I feel like that gets alluded to later on. And I think she's supposed to be younger than Charlotte, who's about 27.
Yeah, Charlotte's 27.
Yeah.
The first Wikipedia. How old is Elizabeth Warren? That comes first. Elizabeth Bennett is 20 years old.
Okay.
So it's not terrible.
No, that is surprisingly appropriate. Yeah, for the time.
But he's I guess I would call Darcy maybe like emotionally stunted.
Yeah, I imagine there was a lot of boarding school in his life.
Yeah, he doesn't know how to talk to girls he likes.
Clearly, he knows how to talk to girls who like him. Well, actually, not even that, because he just doesn't talk to them.
But anyway, so him and Wickham like sort of know each other, I guess.
Something's happening there.
Yes, but...
But we don't get to find out anything more. At some point, as they walked home, Elizabeth related to Jane what she had seen pass between the two gentlemen, but Jane would have... though Jane would have defended either or both had they appeared to be in the wrong, she could no more explain such behavior than her sister. Everyone's confused. Sadly, we don't get any more than that yet.
It's another mystery. But and then we end these chapters with a visit to Mrs. Phillips. Something that amused me is that Mrs. Phillips is still considered to be lower class because her husband is an attorney. So I laughed about that.
Oh, you.
I know. But yeah, so that's kind of where we're left. We have some new guys on the scene. We have Mr. Collins and Mr. Wickham, who's very handsome, and that's all we know about him. And that he's going to be wearing regimentals, so keep an eye out.
We, as we've established, we love a man in uniform.
Yeah, so I mean, a lot happens, even though it's like only like 20 pages or so.
In the way of like our Austin Burns, I feel like the last three chapters were basically one big giant burn of Mr. Collins.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I didn't write as many down. Like, usually I put, like, little fires next to the things that I think.
me too.
But I didn't have a lot.
Me neither, but I feel like I don't usually.
Yeah, I guess, so my two favorites, in chapter 14, Mr. Bennett is thinking about, is listening to Mr. Collins, and it reads, "His cousin was as absurd as he had hoped, and he had listened to him with the keenest enjoyment, maintaining at the same time the most resolute composure of countenance, and accepting an occasional glance at Elizabeth, requiring no partner in his pleasure." It was just sort of like, Mr. Bennett is enjoying thinking that this man is ridiculous, which is nice because once he dies, he doesn't have to deal with this man taking over.
No, Mr. Bennett just jokes about how, you know, oh, this is the guy who's going to take everything away from our children. It's fine. It's cool. Totally cool.
It's fine that he's stupid. Yeah.
And you get the sense that he really only accepted this invitation, this self-invite, just for the lulz. Mm-hmm. It's like, this man's going to make a fool of himself. What else you got?
And then I think maybe you touched on this in chapter 15. Mr. Collins repeated his apologies in quitting the room and was assured with unvarying civility that they were perfectly needless. He's like, I'm so sorry, I must be excused. I'm so sorry. And they're like, okay, bye.
Please go away. Did you have more? Sorry.
No, those were my only ones.
I only had two myself. Mm-hmm. One of them I already read, and it was the one where Mrs. Bennett was talking about Mr. Collins when she continued to rail bitterly against the cruelty of settling an estate away from a family of five daughters in favor of a man nobody cared anything about. I thought that was funny.
It's very funny.
And when Mr. Bennett, same chapter, when Mr. Bennett was teasing her about who's going to come for dinner, she says, who do you mean, my dear? I know of nobody that is coming, I'm sure, unless Charlotte Lucas should happen to call in. And I hope my dinners are good enough for her. I do not believe she often sees such at home.
That's such a good one.
Excuse me.
That's such a good burn. I think that one's my favorite. I think you win this round.
She's just so competitive with the Lucases.
She is. Oh, poor Charlotte.
I know. Charlotte's such a good egg, too. Charlotte, it's funny, too, because in the past we've compared the two of them, and there is some commonality in how they think, too.
In Charlotte and Elizabeth?
In Charlotte and Mrs. Bennett, in their practicality.
Oh, yeah, the practical, like, pragmatic, like, go get your man, like, he's rich, it doesn't matter sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. You need to feed yourself.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's very true.
But maybe that's why Mrs. Bennett sees her as a target.
No, I like Charlotte. And their dad is like a knight or something. It was like knighted. Mm-hmm. So maybe they're like a little bit higher status than the Bennets.
Yeah, it sounds like they have a bit more money.
Mm-hmm. Although not as good food, I guess.
Yeah, apparently not. Like, geez, Mrs. Bennett, rein it in a little.
No, that's a good burn. That one's my favorite. And that was like said out loud. So like most of the stuff that like Jane would like in Sense and Sensibility that she like kept to just narration, a lot of the biggest burns in Pride and Prejudice I've noticed are things that people have actually said out loud.
Now at the time we're like, what? Ooh, hello. Okay, fine. Cool. So that's good. All right. Well.
Yeah.
That was pretty fast.
I know. Any other thoughts on these chapters? I don't know. I feel like a lot of them were sort of set up. Like we know that we now have all the pieces on the table.
Which I feel like we said for like the first half of Sense and Sensibility, where everything just seemed to be set up almost and getting everything in place before letting them just poof.
Yeah. We kept meeting like more and more characters. Like we didn't even meet the steals until like halfway through. So
yeah, it was pretty far in.
Yeah, it definitely feels like things are moving a lot faster in mm-hmm. in this book. More confident, I think. Good. Yeah, you said yes. More confident in the last episode, and I think you're absolutely right.
Yeah, the characters I mean, other than Mr. Collins, who is kind of a caricature, like you said, I feel like we have a really good sense of who majority of these people are and how they interact and how they, like, where they are, like, socioeconomically, how they are just in relation to other people and how they react. It's kind of amazing, actually. And it's really easy to see just why this is such a favorite book of people. Just, it's so gripping. Mm-hmm. So what are you looking forward to next time?
I guess I want to learn more about Mr. Wickham. Like, I feel like I know Mr. Collins and I know how the book wants me to see him, because it literally mm-hmm. says, like, he's not sensible and he's, like, a loser. But we don't know anything about Mr. Wickham other than that he's handsome. And so mm-hmm. anytime we're going to meet a handsome man, I've got to be like, oh, so who's going to be attracted to him? Who's going to be the love interest here? So I'm more interested in learning about him. We still haven't had the ball that Mr. Bingley's promised, so I want to see that. And just really, I'm a big fan of Mr. Darcy, and I'd like to see more banter between him and Elizabeth.
More banter, more fighting their feelings for each other. Maybe Jane actually, like, starting to feel those sparks too, as opposed mm-hmm. to, okay, bye boy. No, all that sounds really, really fun. Something's clearly going to happen with Mr. Collins.
Yeah. Yeah, like he's his chip's on the board for a reason. I'm missing some mm-hmm, sort of metaphor. Mm-hmm. His like what are my chips on the board, pieces on the board.
Is that like craps or something?
I think it's like chess. I think I'm reaching for chess and I'm failing.
Well, what about like Mortal Kombat? A player has appeared.
I mean, now all I want is a Pride and Prejudice Mortal Kombat. I guess we do have that in the zombies, but
I was surprised to see that Mr. Collins was so tall, just because I have like Tom Hollander so.
Oh my god! Mr. Collins. Yeah.
But Matt Smith played him too, right?
Yes. In
the zombies version.
The zombie one. God, the zombie one had the best casting, but it just like didn't go anywhere.
It's a fabulous cast. Too bad it didn't seem like it was a very good movie.
I saw it, and it goes off the rails at the end, but there were some redeeming moments.
Well, we have that to look forward to for adaptations episode. Mm-hmm. So I think that's all from us for this episode. Jesse, would you like to tell everyone where they can find us?
Yes, please contact us. You can find us at thedailynightly.com. You can find us on Twitter at nightlypod, on Instagram at thedailynightly. And I highly recommend that you follow us on Instagram, because Annie has the best Pride and Prejudice memes that she uses. And the one that she used most recently to rep our most recent episode was hysterical and definitely worth checking out. And you can also email us your thoughts at thedailynightly@gmail.com. And remember that Knightley is spelled K-N-I-G-H-T-L-E-Y.
Also, special thanks to Kevin MacLeod for our music in every episode. It's fantastic. And thank you, as always, to you, Jesse, for just being awesome.
Yes, Annie, likewise, right back at you.
All right, I'm looking forward to talking to you next time. We'll be reading chapters 16 through 20. We've got more stuff to go.
Yeah, so much book left. I'm very excited.
Me too. All right, we'll talk to you guys next time.
Yeah, happy reading.
Happy reading.